Welcome to the Cycles of Change radio program. I'm your host, David Katzmeier. We'll come to you every Thursday night at 8 p.m. New York time, 5 p.m. Pacific. Tonight, we're going to be talking about education, the education of our children. We are all quite aware how the world is changing. We're going into new paradigms. The paradigm shift that we said was coming is here. The future is here. And are we thinking about how the children are going to be equipped to it? Are we going to leave it to their own, that they're going to wander into this and have to figure it out? Not necessarily. History shows that as times change, education methods also change. And today we have a pioneer in this. Gina Rokowski, an educator in the state of Delaware, is going to tell us about some of the innovative techniques she has for self-regulation's role in cultivating compassionate and resilient children in a new paradigm of teaching to match the new paradigm of the world. Gina, thank you.
Thank you for having me, David. I'm very excited to be here and have a chance to talk about what I'm so passionate about and excited about for our children and their future and their families and caregivers as well.
Well, Gina, can you tell us a little bit about you?
I was a teacher for several years. I have my master's degree in early childhood education. I've been highly trained in the brain and its relation to behavior and development. I've implemented many brain-based strategies in my discipline programs based on compassion and empathy, as well as choices and consequences and some of those same things. But I've taught kindergarten, I've taught first grade, I've taught second grade. I've worked with kids with ADHD, OCD, reactive attachment disorder, and I'm currently in the stages of working with the Delaware Institute for Excellence in Early Childhood as an instructor for them. I did some research when I was a graduate research assistant with the University of Central Florida, and that's when I first got introduced to social-emotional learning and its impact on a child's future.
Indeed, Gina, you have a wonderful background. And it's interesting when I hear you mention things such as compassion and that you're looking in the emotional development of children, which I think is a very important change, is where we're going.
And so I'm sure hope so.
It looks that way. And so you're not just teaching the three R's.
No. I say the new three R's. Sometimes I think of them as like respect, responsibility, and resilience.
Very nice. That's a shift. Well, you mentioned resilience as one of the three R's. What is resilience, Gina?
Resilience is basically the idea of being able to bounce back when things don't go our way. It's a social emotional competency that helps us to name our feelings, manage our emotions, solve our problems, and make helpful choices. While also maintaining an awareness of the impact that has on those around us. So, you know, if you can basically manage your emotions, name your feelings, and ultimately make helpful choices, you know, you're going to bounce back from any, you know, situation a lot more quickly when things don't go your way.
Indeed, that's an important element because most plans are made to work and there's no fail-safe.
No. I mean, the only safe is that something's going to not work. And then the best plan you can have is, what do I do when things don't go my way? So I think Linda Graham's definition of bouncing back is one of the best. She's a therapist out in California. I think she does some work with UC Berkeley or something. But I think that's one of the greatest easy, simple examples of describing what resilience is.
Indeed, and we need that. So if you teach a child that, you'll teach them how to dance on once
they
trip.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, because, you know, I always tell, you know, teachers and families that I work with, it isn't about the blue crayon that they don't get. It's about, you know, because the blue crayon becomes the blue shirt they didn't get or the invitation to the party, and then they want to, you know, run outside and, you know, open the window and jump out the window to go to the party when they're not supposed to. But it's, and then it becomes a car or whatever. But it's really just about dealing with the feeling of disappointment or frustration, because it really isn't the circumstance or the item. It's really the feeling that goes along with it, and they travel with you from childhood all the way up through adulthood.
Well, that's a very important element, because there is a sort of a machine era concept of looking at emotion as a reaction to something and not considering emotion as a thing in itself.
Oh yeah, I mean, emotions manifest themselves in our body. You know, yes. they are, that's why we talk about resilience as naming a feeling, but managing, you know, the emotions. So they're very easily misunderstood this day and age. And, you know, I was even told a couple times when I was teaching, oh, you know, I had a veteran teacher walk in and tell me my room was too foofy. You know, it wasn't going to work, you know, because I had a safe, you know, I had a place in my room where the children had a safe area if they needed to remove themselves, where they had squeeze balls. And we did a lot of connecting and breath work and things like that. So it was a little different. But it, you know, all my kids always ended up on, you know, more than 80% of them ended up on grade level by the end of the year. So something must have been working.
It must be. And, you know, we tend to underestimate emotion, but yet that can be the obstacle toward someone's intellectual achievements, even if your goals are intellectually
only.
Oh,
I'll talk to you about that for sure. That's and that's what people don't realize is how crucial this truly is to, you know, success of your children, however you want to define that success. But, you know, there's still a lot of academic, you know, I want my child to be successful, meaning, you know, what does that success look like to you? You know, but in order for their intelligence to be fostered and developed, you absolutely have to start with helping them manage their feelings and emotions because of the biology of the effect it has on the brain.
And this is overlooked, and this is, I think, one of the reasons why a lot of kids don't do well in school. They go wayward, they go into drugs, they hang it with their own crowd. There's the element of violence, because you don't stop an emotion because you don't deal with it. It just
gets bigger. Yeah, I mean, whatever need is not being met, yeah, you'll find a way to meet it, consciously or unconsciously, you know. You know, it goes back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, you need to be safe, you need to belong. You know, this is, you know, hopefully what we're teaching our children, and what I'd like to help teach families and teachers is how to help children become their own attachment person, so they have the internal ability to, you know, manage the emotions when things don't go their way and soothe themselves without having to do something detrimental to their future.
So you're putting the power back to the child.
Yes.
Which they already have, if they only realize
well,
it.
Well, yes, and the parents have it too. And that's what I'd really like to help parents understand is it isn't really all like, oh, my kid's fussing and fits. You have the power. You have what you need. And if we can teach you, your kids are going to learn that. So that's, you know, that's the idea of conquering chaos and our mission in empowering and supporting family, schools, and organizations in nurturing self-reliant, resilient children.
Well, sometimes the obstacles are the course, and instead of perceiving how someone feels about something,
yes, ooh, that's a challenge.
As getting in the way,
that's a challenge.
Yes, and you address that.
I try very hard to address the fact that it's okay to feel out of control. I mean, you know, when I walked into a room with 20 some children, I mean, hello. I didn't know what the first thing I had to do, and this was even before I started teaching, was I realized I need to know how to manage these children. I mean, it'll be nothing but chaos in that room if I don't know effective ways of helping them stay focused, because it's a big challenge. So what I'd like for families and teachers and schools to understand is it's okay to feel like you're out of control. If you can own it, it's not such a big monster anymore. I mean, we all have issues, and you know, this is a challenge. You're raising a human being. Of course it's challenging. I mean, you know, I mean, it's hard to make chocolate chip cookies if you don't know how to cook, but you get a recipe, you don't go, well, I'm just going to keep trying, and oh, these suck, you know. And so it's really just giving parents and a recipe to help with, you know, for their children. And so my thing is, it's okay to feel overwhelmed. It's okay not to know. It's okay to feel guilty. We're just going to take that and go, all right, we know it's there. What can we do differently?
It's remarkable. There's a difference between responding to a child and reacting to a child.
Mm-hmm. And those two words get very easily confused.
Yes.
Our response is very different than a reaction. And you know, experts and doctors will tell you the biology in the brain about all of that, because it literally changes the state of the brain. When you have a reaction, you're stuck in your brainstem where you can't learn anything. You're stuck in survival mode. When you're responding, you're using the higher centers of your brain where your problem solving and learning and change can take place.
And lowering your susceptibility to disease.
Yeah, well, exactly, because that's, you know, your cortisol level goes up, which is the stress hormone, and people go, oh, the cortisol stress. That causes heart disease, diabetes, heart attacks, inflammation, which are all of the, you know, inflammation is the marker for all diseases. So, you know, it's what we're doing and what I'd like to do through my work with Conquering Chaos is, you know, lower that cortisol level, increase some of the other hormones that are healthy hormones that encourage the brain development.
That is remarkable as well. And to equip the parents in recognizing and dealing with the children's emotions and helping them to deal with it comes with an element of compassion rather than a parent saying, you're not supposed to feel that way.
Right.
And then blaming the child for what it's doing.
Right.
And how can a parent counsel a child if it's not dealing with their own emotions?
Well, exactly. And nobody likes to hear you're not dealing with your emotions. So I obviously don't want, I mean, people go, no, I can deal with my emotions. Well, I mean, nobody likes to hear something about themselves that they already kind of know. You know, that's like what I always thought of the stamp of approval. Like, oh, you see it. And now you know, I know it, you see it, boom, oh, you know, I try to pretend that isn't an issue for me. But we're never really taught how to deal with our emotions. You know, get over it, stop crying, you know, whatever it is. But they're not really that scary if you just kind of go, yeah, I don't know. And I think, too, helping create an environment of support for parents. Eventually, what I would like to do is have support groups and communities of families where what they learn from Conquering Chaos is continued with support and you know, a sense of community for them, so that they don't learn something and then have to go home and go, oh, you know. So it's kind of really encouraging them through the process of implementing a lifestyle with their children that's based on creating resilience.
You're telling us, Gina, that it's okay to feel a certain way, okay to feel overwhelmed and so forth. You know, neurosis is often defined that regardless of the impact of daily life, a deep-seated feeling that something is wrong with this, you know?
Well, I mean, it's like, you know, when the kid cries in the grocery store, you know, oh my God, you know, people are going to see, and you know, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet. Well, everybody has something they're working on. And if you don't know what to do with your child, that's okay. You know, everybody's child is going to cry. It's really, you know, taking the focus off of how do I appear to other people rather than, oh, my child is suffering, how can I help? You know, and even to your own self, which is part of what I'd like to teach parents and families, is how to be compassionate in the language and what you can do for yourself in that moment. Because if you can say, oh, I'm worried about what everybody thinks, that's hard to have my kid crying like this, you're automatically going to shift from reacting to responding. Then you won't have to worry anymore what anybody thinks.
So we're becoming more of a feeling nation, and we're going to integrate
that
into our teaching.
I hope so.
Well, as we understand our own emotions as parents, as educators, and we help teach children to do this, what is it once you recognize an emotion and you're finding a way to deal with what you're feeling, what the child is feeling? So that brings us to the element of self-regulation. Where do we go once we've taken that first step to say it's okay?
Well, the idea is, self-regulation is kind of, it sounds like such a big word that's maybe abstract, but the idea is just, you know, what self-regulation really is regulating our feelings, thoughts, and actions in service of a goal. And it refers to both unconscious processes and conscious processes. So, you know, when you talk about a goal, you know, I just did my strategic plan, which has these goals that, blah, 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 you know, goals. But when you think about goals, it can be as small as I would like my child to come home from school and start their homework by, you know, 4 o'clock or whatever it is, or I would like my child to be able to, you know, go to bed more calmly, or, you know, whatever. But they're the goals in and of themselves. Or even going to the grocery store and your kid has a meltdown, you know, my goal may be I'd like to go into the grocery store and stay calm during that. But the naming the, you know, dealing with your feelings, the thoughts and actions is pretty much what sums up self-regulation, which is why it's so closely linked to creating resilience. I personally think that compassion plays a huge role in self-regulation for it to be effective, and especially for building resilient children, because it helps to actually accept that suffering is a part of life. And, you know, suffering can't be fixed, it can be relieved. And compassion incorporates things like kindness, empathy, generosity, and courage and tolerance. Because if you have the courage to tolerate, ooh, this is suffering, even if it's just that I can't have the cookie I want, or I'm embarrassed because of my child's behavior, it creates a transformation in the body. So I think the element of compassion is crucial in self-regulation, and ultimately creating resilient children.
Absolutely. And once we realize our own elements, once we feel the feeling and know who we are, rather than run away from ourselves, then we can recognize the feeling, the state of being in somebody else.
Yes, and that's really important for helping children. I mean, empathy is really a missed, I think it's a key to healthy, happy, loving relationships, period, and it's very often misunderstood. At least you're still here. But rather than recognizing, wow, it's really hard when your kid has a meltdown and you're not really sure what to do. You know, that approach, you know, I'd want to work with anybody who could see what I was dealing with, but learning ultimately to help the person, adult or child, to see that themselves obviously leads to being more resilient.
Know yourself, and then you can heal others.
Yes, and that's a curriculum that I'm actually starting to write. I started writing last year. The first step is know me. What would I want to say to my parents if I could have told them, you know, what I wanted them, to, you know, how I wanted them to raise me? And I came up with know me, be with me, show me, support me, and soothe me. So the first idea is really knowing how this, you know, all of these foofy, if you will, you know, the ideas are actually create impact profoundly the development of the brain.
So through your own experience, through your own realization, through your own ability to feel your life and what was going on, and developing the empathy, cultivating that which is in us all.
Right.
You set out on a journey that led you to these wonderful conclusions that sound so obviously true when someone like you speaks them. But you had quite
Thank
a lot
you.
Of research leading up to this and a lot of experience before you got to these obvious conclusions that you're helping us realize.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
In particular myself or with my students, or is there something in particular?
Both, because, you know, you've had your own experience of being able to walk the walk in your own life.
Yes,
but you've taken this from understanding the things that you have gone through and developed these new missing elements that you're integrating into the educational system. There's a parallel here in medicine. When we were doing traditional medicine, then we went to alternative, which is when you leave the traditional.
Right.
And then we went to complementary, where people started doing traditional medicine while seeing another doctor on the side,
right,
which might do maybe acupuncture
or
something.
Done that myself.
But now, what in physical medicine, we've now gone into integrated medicine.
Yes,
and we've found that these elements that people were flocking to were the absolutely crucial missing elements. And you're doing that with education.
Yes, yes. I see what you're saying. It's like systemic almost, I know.
Yes.
But I can tell you this much. I mean, for me personally, it was very important for me to be modeling what I was teaching. And I have had, you know, trauma in my own life. So I did come out on top of that, but by basically using some of these very same tools. And it was important to me because, I mean, the worst is when you go to a workshop or you attend something and, you know, somebody's not practicing what they preach. You know, the show, if you will, is over, and, you know, okay, now we're done with that. And it was really important for me that, and just not just because of that, but what happened was a result of that decision was that I learned it supported what I was already implementing in my life to help me stay resilient based on some of the tragedies and traumas that I've suffered in my own life, like journaling, you know, breathing, being still, you know, as opposed to reaching out there for something outside of myself to soothe myself, you know, cultivating compassion and internal language, which was a huge challenge for me. Only several years ago, I thought, oh, I really actually do have a voice in there, and learning to take the critic with me and go, okay, well, you're going to be with me. This is a part of me. You can come along, but there's also this other part of me that is capable and smart, intelligent, and resilient. But I know these resources work because I've used them, and I've seen it work with other children, which is miraculous. But you know, sometimes I forget too that what I've been through is pretty impressive as well. But that tools like you know, literally noticing when I'm upset, noticing what's going on in my body, is and then naming my feeling are things that I actually use every day and have used that have helped me survive, and ultimately, you know, thrive, because who wants to just survive?
Exactly. So you learned self-regulation in your life. You understood it. You realized it. You didn't avoid it. And you got through it. And the results you had with your children, did that involve in part teaching self-regulation to them?
Yes. Well, and the idea of self-regulation is, believe it or not, it's not something that can be taught. Hmm. It's something that is developed. And this is why it's absolutely important to create experiences for children and even for yourself as an adult that will help shape the brain. Because it is in these experiences that the prefrontal cortex is really developed, and it takes 25 years for that to develop. So, and that is the part of the brain which researchers are calling the CEO of resilience. And that is where skills like self-regulation, which is pretty much the foundation executive skill, but it includes impulse control, learning, gratification delay, prioritization, organization, task completion, initiation, and all of those, which takes a long time to develop in that part of our brain. But experiences shape that. So the idea of creating these experiences that will ultimately help develop that part of the brain, which ultimately will create a resilient child. And self-regulation has been researched and found that it's more important than IQ as an indicator of a child's academic success and future success. And in fact, you look up the marshmallow experiment, you can see the incredible longitudinal study that was done. In addition to that, there's research that shows us that oxytocin is released when you're implementing compassion. And that is the antidote to cortisol. And all of those hormones help in develop that part of the brain where, you know, learning can take place and prioritization and you know, impulse control. If they are not developed, if that you know, these experiences aren't supporting that, what happens is the child is basically comes back to the idea of attachment, which is one of my favorite kind of things. I just love the word, and I think it gives a great visual picture. But the idea is that in times of distress, I'm a child, I reach out for my attachment person. I reach out for the person who is supposed to help me soothe this. If they are not available, or the caregiver is there, but they can't offer this relief, that helps, that puts me in the lower centers of my brain where I am stuck with fight, flight, freeze. And ultimately that state becomes traits. So we become, you know, I lie, I steal, I isolate myself, I keep everything to myself, I'm, you know, all of these different things. So you can see the importance of...
And these patterns become familiar.
Yes, because the brain is pattern seeking. And thank God for neuroplasticity, which allows for the brain to change. But it's a lot easier to create these pathways with interactions that support that brain development and encourage those pathways and that growth. Because then obviously it's not something that has to be rewired later on, which can create a lot more anxiety in making changes.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Well,
thank
you.
Absolutely brilliant. You know,
it's kind of simple, but you know, that's the fact. You know, I mean, it's why, you know, I mean, and ultimately the suffering is really a resistance to change. you know, and
Wait, let me sure. catch that. Huh. Suffering is a resistance to change.
Those are powerful words.
I mean, it's really pretty simple because, you know, you think of suffering, oh, you know, somebody died or, you know, I lost my job, but it's suffering really is little sufferings. You know, I go to the library if I'm a child and I can't get the book I want. That's a moment of suffering. How am I going to deal with the fact that I can't get that book? Am I going to throw myself on the floor and cry? Am I going to take a book out and throw it down? Am I going to sit in the corner and pout? But it is a moment of suffering. It's the same thing with, you know, when you get stuck in traffic. You know, if you're going to be late and you've got an appointment, that's a moment of suffering. And it is a resistance to change because what happened is the pattern of traffic I expected changed.
Yes. And so our emotions are not an obstacle to something. It's part of the process itself. You know, there's often discussed
well
the conflict
said.
Between mind and heart.
Please.
And anybody who's watched the original Star Trek series loves the arguments that used to go on between Dr. McCoy Bones and Mr. Spock and the standoff that would go between them. But what you're pointing out is that we are actually an integrated being. You're seeing that in the development of the brain, of the prefrontal, that our emotions are actually influencing the development of our brain.
Yes,
and how we think.
Well, yeah, and research done, I believe it's Dr. Richie Davidson at University of Wisconsin. They have a Center for Investigating Healthy Minds or something. But I was listening to a talk that he did online, but they've actually found that there are brain cells around our heart.
Yes, yes.
So when we go, oh, foofy emotions, No, because they're the ones, you know, the brain cells, they're sending messages back and forth with these neurotransmitters and all of these that are affected by the hormones that are released. And if we can create experiences that release the healthy hormones and reduce the, you know, the reduction of the stress ones, that's literally why the heart is connected to the brain in my logo with the hands, because it's, you absolutely, in order for us to want our children to be successful academically, socially, whatever, financially, it's crucial to integrate the heart and the mind, and the heart meaning feelings and emotions.
Yeah, and we're really realizing more about ourselves in that way. And I'm sorry I can't cite a web link for this reference, but there's a recent story of a young woman, grown woman, who had a heart transplant, it was a deceased man around the same age. Something happened,
right.
And his heart was available. And it was a successful operation. After she received a heart, her behavior changed a little bit. She developed a fondness for watching sports on TV.
Interesting.
While having a cold beer.
Oh,
now,
how fascinating.
They, not knowing anything about the donor's life,
right.
They went back and they asked some questions about the poor, unfortunate deceased who donated his heart, and that's what he liked to do.
Wow.
So where is the brain?
And believe it or not, there are brains. There are brain cells even in our stomach, and that's why a lot of women, the first place it goes is our stomachs, our feelings, our, you know,
a gut feeling?
Yes, and gut feel, because literally it's in our gut. That's why you hear, you know, about having a leaky gut. You know, when I work with a doctor who's helped me through you know, integrated medicine and all that, and the leaky gut is connected to a part of the brain, so it isn't all academics. In fact, if you think it's all academics, you're going to hinder that success.
it can be
scary feelings. Oh, I have a feeling that, you know, and often we don't even know we're having a feeling. You know, we're so on automatic pilot that we, you know, to have somebody just name the feeling, they'll go to, well, no, I feel like he's doing this. And I mean, I feel like my child is not listening. And I feel like, no, that is a thought. How are you feeling? No. But when I'm telling you, no, okay, what is your feeling? Because then you feel vulnerable. Oh, you're safe. It's okay. It's a feeling.
You know, that is something we need. This would cut down on stress. This would cut down on neurosis. And, and feeling and thought really are one. You know, Socrates used to teach his brilliant students not just what to learn, but what he thought was more important to teach was how to learn. But what you're pointing out to us is that it's how to feel.
Mm-hmm.
And how to accept that we feel. And I would imagine that this carries through in everything in life.
Oh,
and you've had results with children. Now, and are there any particular situations in which self-regulation can be developed and or practiced to aid a child in developing this skill?
Well, yes. And the tricky thing about that is that the most important times where development takes place in the brain is during times of distress. Mm. And that's what I talked about earlier about the attachment and seeking that out. So the challenge really is that one of the most important times for this to really take place, the biology of this to happen, are times of distress. And they're the times when we want to just shy away from that. So while because of that being such a challenge, what I always suggest to anybody working with children is to practice during times of calm, because you're not going to teach somebody to swim if they're drowning. You know, that's not the time to say to the kid when they're going to have a meltdown because they're in the store, you know, now don't do that and whatever it is, because children act on the last three words that they hear, especially up to like, I don't know, is it 5 or 6, maybe even 7 years old. So don't run and you wonder why they're running. That's just because they're visual, but I digress. At any rate, the best thing to do is spend time with your child, helping them to learn some of these things that they can do in times of calm, so that when you get to the store or they go to school or whatever, they already have practiced, you know, what to do. And the other thing I really want to stress for parents and families, teachers and children, is this takes time. You're building a pattern in the brain. So if the pattern has been, I fall on the floor and have a meltdown, it's going to take time to change that to make a new pattern. So to stick with it when the behavior escalates doesn't mean that, you know, but that's their resistance to change, and all they know how to do is have a fit. So that's what they're doing. So they will eventually learn if you stick with it, but it's, you know, creating techniques like teaching them how to name a feeling, using what I call a feeling frame. And I'll have that up on, I'd like to put that up on my website, in fact.
Yes.
So, but drawing pictures with them. What does it look like when you feel angry? What do your eyes look like? Where do you feel it? Is your nose, you know, wrinkled? Is your eyebrows, you know, going a different way, you know, pointing towards your nose? Are you smiling or whatever? But getting them in touch with their feelings and, you know, oh, what happens when this happens? Oh, I think I feel this way when I don't get what I want. But helping them to name their feeling and then creating tools or charts for them, like a calming chart or a comfort kit. Where they have squeeze balls, or they have a little snow globe, or they have some crayons and pencils, but they know what they can do once they've calmed down. So, you know, ultimately the idea is to name the feeling, calm and claim it, you know, and then have a chance to do something with it more effectively. But I think one of the questions that you always get is, well, what do I do if that doesn't work? And here's my answer to that. If you can focus on your breath, focus on where it is in your body. If that's all you do when you're really, like, I'm ready to just scream and yell at this kid and pack us up and take us home or whatever it is, focus on your breath and name your feeling. It will literally change the state in your brain. So you can even hear it as I think about it myself as I'm speaking. It creates a sense of calm. So if all you can do is, I know I'm triggered, I am mad, something's happening here. I literally would do that in my classroom. I had a rocking chair, and I'd be like, you know, with all the tools I had and research and personal experience, there were times when I said, you know, you guys, Mr. Rokowski needs to sit.
Or the old adage of take a deep breath and count to 10.
Yes. You know, so literally, you know, it takes 3 deep breaths to change the state of the brain. So I always had ways of teaching my kids how to do that. But the greatest thing is that I'm modeling for them. Then I would see my students taking a test or whatever, and they'd be over there doing their breathing because they were upset.
That is extraordinary. You know, the ancient Greeks used to say that the beginning of knowledge is to know something by its right name.
So that's a good one.
Yes, and you're helping children to identify, and you're legitimizing their emotion while giving them an acceptable outlet,
right,
alternative for how to express it.
Right.
Because once it's okay that they can feel that way, that they're not being blamed for feeling that way,
right,
or feeling that something's wrong with them.
Exactly.
You give them an acceptable outlet and then get them to look at their own feelings,
right,
as the observer as well.
Yes.
That's
remarkable.
I mean, that's,
you know, giving them the equipment to deal with their feelings, is, you know, and the great thing is when you do that, they start coming up with their own ideas. And then they're owning it. There was, I mean, they came up with different ways of breathing. The Mr. Kowski, look, I came up with this way of breathing. Or, you know, look, we can do this. And how about if I do that? And so they literally start doing their own problem solving. And that obviously helps them to be more available and calm and activate their prefrontal lobe when they're learning and will help with the academics, the intelligence, and all of that. But also being empathetic with them. And this is one of the things that I know from experience is when I literally looked at my children who were really struggling with behavior issues, you know, reminding myself they're trying to communicate something to me. They are suffering. What can I do to kind of help them with this? And that gets into one of the students I had who was very challenging, and she, I was told by her teacher the former year, you know, she was wetting herself on purpose. She was throwing things. She was throwing her work off her desk, coloring on other people's things, not staying in her seat. And she was diagnosed OCD and ADHD. And so this was going to be a challenge for me. And when I used to literally, and she would not get up when it was time to line up for PE or specials or activities. And we always had to do it right after the morning announcements when she was doing her morning work and coloring. She loved to draw, which we talk about artists and stuff. At any rate, I literally would go over to her and got down on, and I started by doing choices. You know, we call her Kathy. Kathy, you may come now, or Mr. Kowski will have to come get you. You know, what are your choices? You know, blah, blah, blah. And that became a struggle. And I thought, what am I missing here? And I literally went over and I sat down next to her and I looked at her in her eyes, because the eye contact is mirroring neurons. And I was compassionate, but set my intention first. And I went and said, you know what? It's really hard to stop coloring, isn't it? You love to color. You don't feel like getting up and going to PE, do you? No, Ms. Rokowski, I don't. I said, it's so hard to stop. I said, you know what? I really don't feel like going either. It's hard. And I mean, she literally would just give me her hand and would get in line. But it's the idea of, I see your suffering. Because literally, sometimes I think, honestly, what people or even children want is to see my suffering. If you don't see it, I'm going to make louder and louder. And all this happens subconsciously, you know, unconsciously. So we don't even realize that that's what we're doing. But taking the time to go, it's really hard when we go to the grocery store and they don't have a sprinkle cookie. All they have is chocolate chip, and you don't like that.
Identify through compassion.
Yes. I mean, I'm telling you, you will watch the dynamic in your relationships change when you implement empathy, because it isn't about trying to fix my feeling, because remember, suffering can't be fixed. It can be relieved. So this little girl was repeating first grade, and by the end of the year, she was reading on grade level and was interacting socially and emotionally with her friends, handling her upset, using her own tools, and it was really amazing to see.
So you've discovered a way, you've realized these things in yourself, you're teaching them to children, you have research, you have examples and success with the children you dealt with. Along the way, I think you've hit on some ancient universal truths. You talk about breath. In ancient Sanskrit, the word for breath is prana, which is also synonymous with life.
I heard somebody tell me that very recently, and I had totally forgotten that was the case. But, you know, I do want to stress that it is the tricky thing about breath is this, or breathing, let me put it that way, is, you know, I at the time of my life when I hadn't implemented these tools, when somebody would tell me to breathe, I just wanted to, you know, punch them in the face. They didn't tell me to breathe. When do I breathe? You know, so that's why I talk about, if you're at such a state, you know, the idea is to avoid getting to the state where you're just so mad you can't, you know, but if you're at the point where you can see that happening, focus on your breath. Even if it's, all of a sudden your focus changes, your brain state yes. changes, you become calmer. So I hesitate to tell, you know, families or kids or parents, whoever, just breathe, because sometimes you don't feel like just breathing, you know, yes. like don't tell me just breathe, I'm going to meditate in the corner, you know, no, it doesn't work that way.
Yes.
So here's a way, because what happens is your breathing will slow down and calm down as a result, without even trying, of just focusing on that breath, or where the emotion is manifesting itself in your body.
So Gina Rokowski of ConqueringChaosLLC.com, you're telling us that one of the best ways to improve our mind is to deal with our heart.
Yes, most definitely.
Well, I thank you for what you've shared with us as the wonderful lessons, and I think that you're in the foreground, the front runner of where the entire education system is going.
I sure hope so.
Well, do you have any parting words for our listeners,
I think,
Gina?
That the only thing I'd like to say, I think it's like should be the end of the month or February sometime that the website will be going up. So that would be really exciting.
Conquering Chaos LLC. Keep checking back. And we have an important event coming up this month here in January 2015.
Yes, we do.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm. I'll be doing a presentation at the Trends Breakfast at the University and
WIST
Club.
Yes.
In Wilmington next
Wilmington,
Thursday,
Delaware.
Wilmington, Delaware, the 22nd of at 7:30 in the morning, a short presentation on why self-regulation is equals
Marvelous.
Resilience and compassion.
And to find out about that event and where to go, in case you're local and you want to attend, just check out Gina's site at conqueringchaosllc.com. You'll find all of the details there. And may this be one of many talks coming up as you share this innovative technique as spearheading the direction in which all education is going out of necessity. Gina Rokowski, I thank you for sharing your thoughts and your dreams.
Thank you, David. My pleasure.